This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
The original image is our drawings on Mylar, frosted Mylar, that then I photographically expose to a screen that's a very high resolution screen. So they're like 300 DPI.
Right. Yeah. And then so it's a photo silk screen that you're working with.
Right.
Well, let's just, before we get into the particulars, let's just talk a little bit about what people see when they walk into Ogden Gallery. Like, you describe your work for us, or this exhibition. How about that?
Well, first of all, I'm thrilled that they hung it so beautifully.
It is dropped gorgeous.
I have to say, I think that Bob did a great job, and I'm very pleased. Well, there is a combination of one seven-foot-long piece that really was inspired by my Sitka residency, and it's emblematic of Japanese ways of working in the Edo period, which is what I studied when I was at Berkeley. I really studied only Asian art. And it's a combination of trees, and some of them are actually historical trees from old engravings that are very enormously blown up, combined with the drawings that I did from the Sitka trees, you know, from Sitka, and, you know, there are evergreens, but there are also deciduous trees in that group. And that piece has something that, you know, one wouldn't know. It looks like it's gold foil on it.
Yes.
But in fact, it's actually handprints that are printed in a different color than the gold background. So it's about restoration, but it's also about destruction, you know, that combination that humans foist on the natural world.
So what I'm hearing here is that when we look at one of your works that's at this exhibition, there are layers to the images of the trees.
Some of
it is an art history reference. Some of it is your own image that you're doing. And then you're layering that with things that create a pattern, like this palm print.
Right.
So that's, right? That's pretty accurate.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah. So, because I'm seeing all those layers when I go in there, and it's true, there is something that's kind of familiar about some of it, and now I know why, because you're taking something I've seen out of art history. But it doesn't hit you over the head. You have to spend a long time with it, and though I thought it was familiar, like I said, I couldn't absolutely nail it. But were some of those images sort of famous paintings?
No, they're actually, I'm interested in the more anonymous qualities. So they're small engravings. You know, I taught printmaking for many years, and so I'm very interested in these small, tiny engravings that appear in books.
Right.
And most of them are over 100, 150 years old. I go to historical societies from each place that I live, which, I mean, that the biography of all the different places I've lived has a lot to do with the meaning of the work for me.
Oh, okay.
So, and then, of course, these images are only like 3 inches or so. So when they get blown up, yes, they change dramatically. And I often redraw into them as well. I mean, they're not taken, you know, absolutely. I eliminate any people that are in them for sure.
Yes.
I mean, some of them had Catholic nuns in them. They have religious depictions. So, you know, I've really changed the meaning of them a lot.
Wow.
Just take parts that I'm interested in.
So, okay, so let's just talk a little bit about some specific pieces. So there's one where it's very obvious that it sort of like has a Japanese influence. It's where there's an image on top of an image, right? It looks like the tree is in its own space, and then there is space around it, almost like some kind of border or something. High color. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's the one I posted on my blog, and I posted it on Facebook.
Yes.
And it is a little different than everything else there. Talk to us a little bit about that work.
Right. Well, that's the piece that I mentioned in the beginning. That's the title of the show, and then again.
Okay.
Well, except that it doesn't have anything to do with riffs, that piece.
All right.
But so the that is the old etching that I did. And the reason it looks so different is because it was from an earlier piece.
Right.
Now, there are two pieces behind the desk that actually have fire images in them. And those are also parts of old prints that then I have revised, you know, redone. Yes. I guess writers do this all the time. But so I did a whole series of forest fire paintings many years ago and some prints with it. I was never really satisfied with the prints, so I have them in a drawer, right? And this just seemed like the perfect way to combine them, this image of fire. And one of them actually has bugs in it as well.
Uh-huh.
And so...
Well, the color's really dense and lush. I mean, mm-hmm. I certainly don't consider this... are you saying that body of work you weren't sure about at the time you made it?
It might have been. You know, with prints, they're often ones that aren't perfect or the proofs or something like that.
Sure.
And obviously, if I think there's good potential for one, I keep it. And,
you keep it, yeah, right. So. I'm talking with Rita Robillard. She has a show at Ogden Gallery. You can go to ogdengallery.com and get more information about this exhibition. And you have your own website, too, which is your name, right?
I do, yes, .com.
With some past exhibitions, which we're going to get to, because I could see that it's all very connected. Now, all right, so another thing in this show was the beautiful grid of 9 works on a wall that was just drop dead. Is that 9 or 12?
9, you're right.
9 yeah. works on a wall that was just drop dead gorgeous. So you're looking at 9 pieces. That's each a square, I believe.
Mm-hmm, yes.
And it's sort of like you've taken that layered tree to a fine iconographic art. And just talk to us a little bit about doing the grid and why you did and was it planned and all those things.
Well, Bob and I talked about it. We've just decided to hang it that way. They weren't totally conceived of as a grid.
Uh-huh.
I printed them in Berkeley. I had a residency at Kalai Institute in Berkeley. And so I carried all of my work down there. And... those pieces, I think they're just really playful. I mean, honestly, it's just ways. Because I had complete use of facilities, I could remake and make screens often. So I was able to play around with how things work together in a way that in my own studio, I don't have facilities to make the screens.
Sure.
So I can print them, but that's it.
Yeah.
So, I had 3 months at Kalai, and so that was plenty of time to
this
really
was in
work
Berkeley
on them.
Or?
Yes, in Berkeley.
Okay. So so you're telling me then, you're telling us that those pieces, that they're not painting at all. It's all printing.
The first layer is probably painted.
Okay.
And then the top layer, which might be... kind of reflections or light on something, those are painted.
Yes.
Clearly not orthodox in the way I use materials.
Sure. So I think, you know, you're probably a really good example and advocate for artist residencies and how they're able to, you know, give artists opportunity to make images that we just wouldn't be able to make otherwise.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, well, Sitka was just the best. I mean, they were so kind and giving, and the space is so beautiful. And
talk to us a little bit about that, because I mean, a lot of people, they may have heard of Sitka, but they don't know. Like, what was your experience? What did you apply for, and what did you get?
Sitka Center for Art and Ecology, and I had a sabbatical, a 2-term sabbatical from Portland State, where I teach, and in previous sabbaticals, I've gone to Europe or I've gone, you know, traveled. And lived in New York or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I really wanted to spend time in the Northwest. I wanted to kind of get some sense of the Northwest in a way, because I had done a whole series when I was in Pullman, Washington, mm-hmm. which, of course, is a very different kind of landscape. So I wanted to have this lushness, this sense of abundance that you really experience here from the rain.
Uh-huh.
So I applied only to Sitka. I mean,
put all your eggs in one basket.
I did. And I have to say, I was rejected once a long time ago from Sitka. So I really did my due diligence.
Here we she's saying persistence. You got to keep trying.
And but they, you know, I had a lovely house there that's donated by people who live up there, and it's just spectacularly beautiful. And I had a great studio. They have a printmaking studio there, although I didn't use it in its traditional way.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? This tradition? What did you do that's different?
Etching and monotypes or something would be the thing to do. I actually did drawings on the acetate. is what I did.
Right.
Observation is an important part of my work. I mean, that sense of observing how one observes, you know, and so.
Can we talk a little bit about trees?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, it's just, I know there are some artists out there, I've had the conversation, it's like, well, if I see another painting of a tree or whatever, right?
I knew that.
You knew that.
I knew
that going in.
It's Coles to Newcastle, of course.
It's what now?
Coles to Newcastle.
What does that mean?
Coles, well, Newcastle was where coal, like the burning coal,
was made. Okay, right.
Coles to Newcastle.
It's like, please, enough already. So, but then you just hit it out of the ballpark with this show. So what was your thing with trees and how were you able to go forward in spite of all that?
Right. Well, my biography is important. I grew up in Manhattan. Uh-huh. You know, and so really the trees that I knew were fenced in. And sometimes you had to have a key to get in to see them.
Right.
You know? So as I've lived in other, and I lived in California for a long time before I went to Pullman and did a lot of backpacking and stuff like that. And just the freedom of being able, you know, things I could never have dreamed of as a child. And just trees are what I see. You know,
right.
I mean, you just can't. Right. You don't really control that in the world, you know, your focus. Berkeley also has this incredible Mediterranean kind of climate, and mm-hmm. so it had. And also, I lived in Brazil for 3 years,
right.
And that has a lot to do with the tree thing, because things happen that you just can't imagine.
What do you mean? I have not been to Brazil, so what are you
referring
to?
Well, the trees grow in different ways, and the fruit comes out of the bark of the trees, of the jabuticaba. And, I mean, they're just spectacular shapes and sizes and lushness that, you know, I... Certainly. That was the first time I'd ever lived. I lived in a city in São Paulo, and then I lived in the state of Minas Gerais in a small town. And it was the first time in my life that I'd ever lived in a rural place. So, just watching a chrysalis open was like totally new to me, you
right.
know? So
right.
It's, wow. I think that's why the natural world, I think if I had had a choice, I would have been a scientist. But that was not even thought of in New York City where
right.
women didn't do it.
And women didn't do it. Yes. Yeah. You're listening to Art Focus here at KBOO. If you want more information about this radio show, you can go to kboo.fm/artfocus and you'll see links to my guests and there's audio files on the site. I'm talking with Rita Robillard. She has a show at Ogden Gallery, and you can go to Ogden Gallery and get more information about this show. And then again, yes?
And then again.
So kind of a revisitation, and just the printmaking, being able to use prints that were from long ago, but then doing mm-hmm. new things with them. So just a little bit of talk about art history here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I see a little bit, not only Japanese prints, but also fin de siècle. Am I right about that?
Sure. I hadn't thought about that, actually.
But
yeah.
It's there, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, somehow. And then also, all right, this is maybe attached a little bit to previous exhibitions, but luminosity, mm-hmm. the luminous painters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
yes.
part of, talk to us a little bit about that, because I saw that, especially in that nine-piece piece mm-hmm. Installation, those works, but obviously it's there in previous works as well.
Well, but I'm really interested in not being a part of the Hudson River School.
Well, maybe you're making a comment.
Because,
how about
right,
that?
Because that's obviously manifest destiny and everything is open and go
yeah.
go move west, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, of course, I've already moved west, but so is everybody else. Right.
Right.
So
right.
what, if you notice, the space is very closed in those, whereas in the Manifest Destiny paintings, the church and all of, there's a huge amount of space. It's like everything is possible.
Yes.
So I certainly am interested in countering that point
yes.
of view.
But you reference it.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Of course.
Yes. And you did this in previous works, no? I mean,
I did. You're talking about the luminous. Goodness,
I wrote it down, Luminous Frontiers.
The Luminous Frontiers, and that actually has to do with scientific research in outer space and also in micro photography.
So talk to us, this is actually a body of work that's on her website. You can go to ritarobillard.com right. and you can see these images. Talk to us a little bit about what you were doing there.
Well, I was interested in this idea of the mirroring of all life, so that the internal body, parts of the internal body, as well as outer space, these images, all mirror each other in some structural way. And so I kind of combine them in ways that you can see that. You know, I put very small things, very large, mm-hmm. and then give you backgrounds to think of. It's like, it's our aspiration to always have frontiers. Frontiers are the most exciting thing when you have a new possibility, right?
Right.
It's the realization that often doesn't quite match.
Uh-huh.
So I'm interested in that sense of aspiration.
And so is this also related to your own biography, like coming from New York, coming from the East, where, like you said, you had to get a key to go visit a tree? and then you come out West, and of course... Was there a little bit of that new frontier idea in your mind?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I mean, well, I think all of us who came to California in, it was like 68. Yeah.
Whoa.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Sure, you know, it was just thrilling. I mean, anything seemed possible.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so, in a way, your work was kind of, it's autobiographical, mm-hmm. even though yourself is not actually in the
right,
work.
Exactly.
Yes. Then there was another exhibition that, Lookout Outlook.
Right.
Right. This is now you're in the Pacific Northwest when you make this body of work. Yes.
Well, yes, but I'm actually much further inland.
Okay.
I went to Fire Lookout Towers in Idaho, Montana, and Washington, and the Lookout Towers, of course, which are you know, this idea of anachronism comes up a lot, and so certainly they are not used for the purpose of watching for a fire. Anymore. Hardly at all, because satellites can do it.
Yes. But the structures still remain.
Right. And you can rent them. And I did with my partner, and I spent many wonderful days there. And so I photographed.
You mean like a camping?
It's a little hard. I mean, you have to take everything up all these stairs. It's
sure.
like a huge thing, I have
uh-huh.
to say. But anyway, we had a great time.
What a view.
And so I photographed the windows, and there are 28 windows that
from,
are circular.
From the tower out,
right,
looking out.
Looking out. And there are those windows inset into the, it's actually Tyvek that creates this installation.
Uh-huh.
But during that same period of time, I was also a visiting artist in Lacoste, France. And Lacoste is where the Marquis de Sade has his chateau.
Oh,
and
wow.
So, which is also a 360-degree view. And so the images of the wall are walls, medieval walls, that are on that on the panel that goes around the room. And those are screen printed.
Wow.
And then the windows that are inset are actual digital prints that I have enhanced with Photoshop, which I think is wonderful hubris,
uh-huh.
To enhance the sky. But
wow.
I've made it look fiery so that it has this fire quality because of when we look out, we often see what we project out into the world.
And was this the same time that you were making those trees on fire?
No, this was after that.
That was after yeah. that. Okay. All right. So what's your thing with fire?
Well, I have been backpacking and it's quite frightening to be where you know there's a fire and you don't know if you can get down without going through the fire.
Yes.
You know, so I had that experience first. And then, of course, after I had really started this painting series, there was the big Yellowstone fire. And we learned a lot more about how trees behave in that with that. They need fire. You know, we've been stopping fires for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the.
One of the factors
interested me
in it. So, okay, when I talk with you on the phone, you know, asking you to come on with me, I believe it was then that I said, I just found that work so beautiful. And you said, yes, well, now what was your response there? Because I could tell that beautiful was a double-edged sword and not, you know, something to fight against and fight for, and it's complicated, right?
It is complicated.
Talk to us about that.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, my intention to be truly seductive is what I mean. I mean, that's it. I'm consciously doing that. But I also think that beautiful is an antidote to tragedy. And, you know, not only knowing it in my life, but there is tragedy in the world.
Yes.
And Miriam Shapiro once said, when somebody asked her about making beautiful work, she was making figures dancing in her femage. Uh-huh. She said she grew up with two Russian communist parents in New York City. And uh-huh. Depression was a big thing.
Right.
So she wanted to make art that was joyous.
Yes.
And I actually feel the same way. I do feel that it's an antidote to things that I can't control and things that are not mm-hmm. as happy. You know?
But now let's just talk a little bit about the art world here.
Mm-hmm.
Is beauty, I mean, it's gone in and out of fashion, no?
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about your stance in that. You've been making art for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there a position
well,
that you
some
find?
Some of it wasn't beautiful. I mean, the okay. forest fires were probably, I mean, they were way too red, number one. And I did a whole series of night landscapes, too. So wow. I don't think, and I did a series of 20 pieces about Hanford, uh-huh. Which was a very political piece.
Yes.
It's interesting because the radio is just saying how they're leaking again, the tanks there.
Oh,
well,
I know.
That's 20 years ago I did this piece and they were leaking then.
Yes.
And I just had to do something. And it's when the work, I was kind of aware of this idea of seduction and making them, making work that people would want to look at, but then having a different message in it.
Uh-huh.
I testified at some of the hearings at Hanford, but mm-hmm. I don't really think that art, that's going to change anything, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. I gave up that idea, but it was an interesting research. And of course, again, I worked with scientists. I worked with physicists in how to make nuclear waste like visible because it's an invisible thing.
Yes.
So I used some of the paradigms from art history, of course, because what's invisible is Mary's the dove coming down to Mary,
uh-huh.
the conception and all, you know, there are all of these angels
there's,
and things like
a lot
this
of examples.
In this, yeah,
right. So, but okay, but back to the beauty thing here for
mm-hmm,
a moment,
okay,
because it's something that I'm really interested in as an mm-hmm. artist, as you know. And that's that to
right.
me.
Right. Well, your work is very seductive, too.
Thank you. But, you know, it's funny. And when I'm making it, I don't know that I'm thinking about how anyone's going to be seduced or how I'm going to uh-huh. be seduced. You know, I am sort of naively thinking, well, this looks good. Whereas I think, you know, maybe you're a little bit more strategic about making something beautiful. I mean, you knew when you were making these trees that was an element that had to be there.
Well, yeah, but mostly they are just beautiful. I mean, I just tried to make them accurately.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I would say that the gold is one of those things, which is kind of a dangerous thing to do, but it had a metaphoric quality in terms of Japanese art. I mean, it's a place neither heaven or hell, you know, it's a special place above where we are, you know?
Right.
And so that interested me, this whole idea of using gold. And of course, I'm using gold acrylic, so it's gold plastic compared to gold.
Gold plastic.
Compared to gold leaf, right?
Now,
so
that
that's important.
Is that the first layer that you're laying down? On some of those?
Well,
it's an interesting process.
The big piece actually has orange under the gold.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
About how many layers are you putting in one of those works?
Oh, I can't tell you because it just
depends.
I keep on working until I find what I want, you
uh-huh.
know. So, yeah.
So, just want to ask you a little bit about being an educator because
mm-hmm.
you've been teaching a lot, right?
Right.
And I mean,
almost
25 years. And now there are plenty of times I don't have, you know, I have someone on who's not teaching, but if they are, I like to touch on it a little
mm-hmm.
bit. You know, for instance, my last guest was Michelle Ross, and I asked
mm-hmm.
her, "What would you like your students to take away?"
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to just ask you the same. Like, do you have a philosophy in your teaching? What's important to you now? What's something that you're wrestling with or wanting to focus on in your teaching that's important for you?
Well, I certainly don't teach styles. I mean, I think that, you know, when I grew up, I mean, it was all abstract expressionism, right? It was tyranny.
Oh,
you know, I mean,
yes.
I had a few other teachers, but truly, that was tyranny.
I had that, too, in New York.
Yeah,
right, I only
York
wanted
too,
to paint
right?
one way.
Oh,
yes.
And so the students have to make contracts with me, and they develop their own. They work from artists. They give them a whole list of artists, and then they have to do a report on the artist, and then they take something from this artist's work and from themselves, and they create a series of work based on that. I mean, that's one of the classes that I'm teaching now.
Uh-huh. So you're teaching them engagement with art history or engagement with their community.
Right.
Like it's not all about them. They've got to be looking
right,
at masters
exactly.
and seeing seeing what art looks like.
Well, and they have to be all contemporary artists.
Okay.
In this case.
In this case, yes.
So.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's funny. Like, well, who are the kids interested in? Who's hot right now? I mean, I would imagine there's certain names that come up that certainly didn't exist, right, a few years ago.
Oh, let's see. There sure are. God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to come off at the top of my head.
Yeah.
I'm not going to.
That's all right. That's all right. It's about them anyway.
I'm sorry. I have a cold.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You know, I do think it's interesting that, you know, that kind of trend. I mean, it just changes so quickly. You know, what's really hot today is not necessarily going to be here later. Oh, Rita, we're running out of time, so I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. You do a great job.
So I've had Rita Robillard with me. She has a show that's at Augen Gallery. It's still up, but has one more week to go. So you can go to augengallery.com and get more information about the show. It's in the DeSoto building, which is right on Broadway and like Davis, I think, in Northwest Portland. I wanted to let you know, too, that I won't be here for about a month because I am going to go to the Volta Art Fair in New York. I have a show there that's going to be, when is that, March 7th through the 10th. And if you're going to New York for the art fairs like the Armory Show and all of that, please come by and see me. I'll have a booth there with Frosch and Portman. This is Ava Lake. Thanks so much for listening to Art Focus. I'll be talking with you in a few weeks.
Music and Mayhem via downtempo, hip-hop, rap, drum and bass, breakbeats, and everything else except the kitchen. The Soundbox focuses on local hip-hop noise, abstract originators, classic hits, respecting the quiet storm, and toasting the original. Your hosts are Dina B and PDX Biologic. Tune in to Soundbox every Saturday from 10 p.m. to midnight here on KBOO Portland.
Tuesday, February 26th at 6 p.m. Tune in, turn on, and remember, 45 years of KBOO Community Radio. This month, we'll hear from Bob Bailey and Sheila Rubin, who were both involved in the early days of KBOO. Tune in, turn on, and remember is a monthly series that will run through the year 2013, KBOO's 45th anniversary year. If you have a story about KBOO that you want to share for this series, contact KBOO's station navigator at navigator@kboo.org or find out more at kboo.fm/stories. And remember to listen Tuesday, February 26th at 6 p.m. only on KBOO Portland.
A public hearing will be held in the Oregon House of Representatives today to decide whether to eliminate the death penalty. The bill, House Joint Resolution 1, is sponsored by Representative Mitch Greenlick and is slated to be on the 2014 general election ballot. The hearing is today at the House Judiciary at 1 p.m. and will be on live stream. Monday night, the Portland School Board approved to merge two schools in North Portland, Ockley Green Magnet Program and Chief Joseph Elementary. They will continue to operate as two campuses. Superintendent Carol Smith's proposal was in consideration of the community's protest against closing another school in the Jefferson High School cluster, which has experienced upheaval in the past few years. Oregon's unemployment to job openings ratio is 5-1, according to a new Oregon Employment Department report. This was an improvement from last year's 6-1 ratio, but is still higher than the national average, which is 3 unemployed to every job opening. FBI are tracking anarchist groups after several recent attacks on banks and businesses. Surveillance cameras have caught them dressed in black with masks, breaking windows and ATMs with rocks. author, philosopher, and host of Anarchy Radio, John Zerzan, says these acts are more than vandalism, but a way to further anarchist ideology of no authority. Another shootout occurred yesterday at the Silverton RV Park in Northeast. Deputies and Oregon State Police troopers responded to reports that there was a man with a rifle and handgun shooting throughout the park, in which another man was hit and taken to the hospital. The suspect was shot and died later at the hospital. This is Desiree Garcia with KBOO News.
Aquí yo estaré presente.